Welcome to House of Comments. I'm Charlotte Henry. She's just about Emma Bunnell.
About 50% of Emma Bunnell.
Yeah, like, it's, I don't know if it's in body and not in spirit, or in spirit but not in body.
In pyjamas is what it is.
Yeah. I mean, I say this with professional respect and personal love. You look a bit broken.
It's been a very, 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 very long couple of weeks working up to the conference.
Yep. We are going to obviously spend most of the show discussing Labour conference because, you know, a lot of interesting dynamics. We're going to have to start in the Middle East, though, because obviously, look, you and I decided quite early on we weren't going to give a running commentary on the conflict between Israel and Hamas, simply because if you want foreign policy, there's different podcasts that you can listen to for that. But obviously, Sir Starmer, for one thing, went from the Labour Party conference in Liverpool early to New York, to the United Nations General Assembly. And of course, in the north of Israel, things have exacerbated. There was rocket attacks from Hezbollah onto Israel, you know, aimed at Tel Aviv. Obviously, Haifa could well be in the firing line as well. These are major, major cities. So that changes the dynamic. Obviously, there's been a significant response to Israel as it tries to take out Hezbollah. Look, I find it, as you might imagine, all deeply troubling and upsetting. And I was in Israel a couple of weeks ago and was struck. Look, I was with the Israeli government tourist office. I want to say that out loud, and I'm writing about it for the Jewish News. But I was struck with the people we met, the sort of resilience and the determination to carry on from Israeli society. But of course, there's lots of displaced people within Israel. We know about, I mean, I don't quite know how to describe the current state in Gaza. As someone who has long advocated for a two-state solution, I find the whole thing, one way or another, deeply depressing. So, I mean, that's where we are. Oh, as I say, Britain, France, USA, they've all called for a ceasefire between Israel and Lebanon, just because of the capacity of that conflict to trigger a much wider regional conflict is so, so serious.
Yeah, and I mean, as you already quite rightly said, we're not foreign policy experts at all. I was struck, I think, the actions by the Israeli government, the slightly almost comic book kind of approach with the I mean, it's not funny. I put that up front, but the use of bizarre exploding technologies.
I mean, in a way, it was a sort of genius operation from beginning to end to take out these Hezbollah people using their own equipment.
But what it immediately triggered in me were memories of the shift in 2003 from a war contained in Afghanistan, where the direct combatants in 9/11 had been trained and sheltered and were largely from, expanding that to Iraq. And while I know that obviously there has been Hezbollah attacks on Israel on an almost daily basis.
For a year, that's right.
The expansion of the conflict in Gaza into this second theatre brought back very strong memories of my feelings about that. And as you know, I'm conflicted about the war in Gaza itself. Not the righteousness of the Israeli government to take action, but the righteousness of the actions that they have sometimes taken, the way that it's been pursued. But I remember in 2003, in your classic soft left positioning, being, but I was in favour of Afghanistan, but I'm not in favour of expanding it to Iraq. And how do you get that on a placard? And so that was my immediate trigger. But as you say, I think beyond that, you and I are not strategic defence specialists. We're not international foreign affairs specialists. We could probably get someone interesting on at some point once we know what the hell is going on. And if we ever know what the hell's going on.
Look, this is a part of the world I've been involved in work on. It's a part of the world I know, I'd like to think I know fairly well. I just want to say one thing actually before I guess we move on. In Tel Aviv, they've now created something called Hostage Square, which is, as you might imagine, there's various displays and tributes and reminders about the hostages still held in Gaza. I know we will talk about Lebanon because that's the new thing, but I just want to come back to this to sort of remind everyone how this all started, if nothing else. Lots of it I found deeply, deeply traumatic, as you might imagine. There's a big Friday night dinner table with every picture of every hostage, including baby chairs for the children, you know, the babies held who were taken into Gaza. I met the sister of one of those hostages who were killed, one of the six who were killed as they were nearly rescued, and his picture was there. I have to say, I was reduced to tears when that first happened, but so I don't want to dwell on it too much. The thing that actually disturbed me the most is in this hostage square, they've recreated a tunnel, the kind of tunnel that the hostages are being held in, which you can walk through. And that's traumatic enough. And I didn't realize before I started walking through it, but they have sounds. They have the sounds of gunfire, people walking ahead of you, sort of disturb to demonstrate what the hostages are probably having to listen and see every day. And it really was throwing. And the tunnel sort of felt longer than you thought it might. And I came out, as I say, quite disturbed from that. And it just sort of brings, as we approach the anniversary of October the 7th, it just kind of brings back the sort of horror of what some people are still going through, how and what is, you know, how this sort of, for want of a better phrase, how this all started. I do hope in terms of, while I do think taking on Hamas is the right thing to do, as you might imagine, I don't have all that much time for this current Israeli administration. You can probably, I think that's probably easy to assume. And I do think, again, I think there's a righteousness in taking on Hezbollah who, when they fire rockets at your citizens. But, an expansion of a war into a second theatre, as you put it, is obviously deeply troubling, particularly because of the capacity to spread into a really quite horrifying regional war. We will see what happens, and hopefully things can, we may well reflect on the anniversary next week. Anyway, I'm glad we've touched on it, and as it is such a developing situation. As I said, Sir Keir Starmer left the Labour Party conference because he had to attend the UN General Assembly. Just a fluke of timing. There's a quite a few bits I want to talk to you about from Labour Conference. But first of all,
Can I say up front that I almost certainly you have seen more of those bits than I have, just to give a disclaimer to our listeners. One thing that people who listen to podcasts like this might not know about the people who attend party conferences is that if you are working, as I was, for organizations that do a lot of fringe events, you don't see a great deal of the actual conference. What you see
On the
is a
main
great deal of
floor.
your fringe events. So I can tell you a great deal about how the environmentalist movement is feeling right now. I can tell you, having switched hats halfway through the week, how the Fabians events went. What I don't have is that intricate detail of, the speeches beyond Keir Starmer's, which I hosted a watch party for.
Well, I'm pleased you said about how the environmentalist movement is feeling, because I want to take a step back and just ask you, having been there, been at the fringe events, talked to people at the bars, whatever, How is the Labour Party feeling? Because I remember very clearly the conference you went to before the election, you came back jubilant. You described a sort of jubilant mood out there, given a confident mood, which proved to be correct. Now the sort of cold, hard reality of government has set in. How did you find the mood at Labour conference?
So, Charlotte, it was a game of two halves. There you go, my football analogy of the
I'm
week.
so proud of you.
I think there was a certain amount of nervousness going in about what the mood would be like, which is bizarre on the face of it, because obviously we had just won a massive landslide. And you just had to say Labour's back in government after 14 years and you get an automatic huge cheer. I mean, that was kind of, one way to make sure you got one applause line at least,
Yeah,
as
it's the
anything
equivalent of
that you
saying
did.
72 Lib Dem MPs.
Exactly. So I think that there was a lot of nervous tension, particularly before Rachel Reeves' speech. Would she be able to do a bit more optimism? Could Keir Starmer bring an optimistic tone to it? And I think that by the time I left on Wednesday, it was largely felt that that had happened. Tuesday night felt a lot more positive and sunny and happy, and delegates generally feeling that they had a better sense of things than they'd had on, say, Saturday, Sunday night.
That's interesting.
So I think that if conference has any particular jobs, one of them is to G up activists and get them ready for the next fight. And I think that that was very much kind of job done. There'll be fights internally. I assume the big vote on winter fuel payment went through on Wednesday morning, but no one was paying attention because we were on a train home, which is exactly why they
Did it
managed to
on
organise
the
to do it that day.
Yep.
That was a win from the leadership. But I mean, the Labour Party is notoriously fractious as a party.
No, surely not.
I mean, we're not the party fights. Each party, all parties are unhappy, but they're all unhappy differently, to completely butcher that quote. And I think Labour fractiousness happens in two spaces. It happens between activists and the centre, and then between players in the centre. And we're seeing a lot of that at the moment. All this completely annoying briefing against Sue Gray about what's
Who
happening.
didn't feel able to attend the party conference?
Well, I mean, frankly, she's got better things to do. She should be running the gym. She's supposed to be doing the whole building the machinery of governance stuff. You can't do that from a the bar of the Pullman. So I think in terms of the tension between the senior the cabinet, and it's so weird not saying shadow cabinet, I cannot get my head around it, and the activists, that I think definitely left the conference feeling better. I think there was a strong message from the activists to the centre to get your bloody act together, and whoever it is briefing should be sacked. I mean, I don't know how many times I heard that from stages and in conversations at bars.
You probably missed this, but I think just because you were too busy. But Ruth Davidson on a podcast was talking about the same kind of thing. I think she was talking about the kind of a lot of the briefing and the freebies and all that stuff, and was like, basically, you should get every SPAD into a room, give everyone a bollocking, and
Yeah,
fire three
sounds totally right. Yeah.
of them.
Her encouragement for
By the way, you are unsurprisingly correct that the party conference did vote for a reverse to the winter fuel payment
and it
cuts,
means Jack.
and it won't make the slightest bit of difference to anything.
They just cannot back down on that now. Whether they wish they'd never done it in the first place, I don't know. But you cut. There's just no way to back down on it. What I think they should have done, and this is where I do think they've got an issue, is there was a much, much better sequencing piece of work that could have been done.
Yes, you said this before, and I do have some Yeah, I get what you're saying. Go on.
Yeah, so you bring in a social tariff, which essentially means that you bring down everybody's bills, never mind, or everybody who's in that category's bills. And then the winter fuel allowance becomes pointless, and it's not just a massive transfer of government money to private investors' money.
I'm going to ask you about Sir Keir Starmer's speech. I should say, if you really want to get Emma's hot take, you should become a paid Patreon member at patreon.com/House of Comments podcast, because you did give us a great, I really enjoyed listening to it, a hot off the presses reaction. I'm obviously going to have to take the piss a bit because sausages and hostages, I just want to know what the train of thought was to get to
Well, they just
there.
sound alike, I think.
It
I
was a
don't have
bizarre.
anything deeper to say than that, other than possibly to bemoan the state of our media, but I fair enough.
Oh, I think any, if it had been the Conservatives, but if Boris Johnson had done it, I think he'd have been done as well. I just, so.
That short shit all the time, and then was told
Correct.
he was a fabulous orator. Look, yeah, he stumbled over his words. It was funny. I don't have a
Well, I
deeper
actually,
analysis of it than that.
I'm not sure it was fine. I did see there were some of the hostage families were at the conference, and one of them was quite equivocal that they didn't want to sort of do the mocking thing and weren't offended. They were just pleased that Sir Keir Starmer had raised the issue, which I get, and I think that's fair enough. It wasn't a great moment. It was, but anyway, I think there is a also a quite reasonable point that the most important thing was to highlight the issue. Anyway, and I don't sort of particularly, well, I said I was going to take the piss, but I don't particularly want to make light of something so serious. But anyway, it was not a great moment. And obviously, there's been more coming out as well about sort of these freebies for Sir Keir Starmer. Now, there's one I actually have a bit of, I don't know if sympathy is the right word, but I sort of agree with him on. Have you had a chance to see the exchange between him and Beth Rigby about the sort of house his son went into to study for his GCSEs?
No.
No, it's fine because it was him really pushing back. And he, quite reasonably, I think, he seemed to be, you know, there are some moments where politicians really push back quite genuinely and get really cross about things. And it's normally to do with their families, right? So when their families come into it is normally the line for most politicians. That was clearly the case for the Prime Minister here. And he basically was saying to Beth Rigby, look, there were pre it was a general election campaign. There were press camped outside my house. So I tried to organise somewhere quiet for my son to do his exam preparation. No money exchange hands. The way you have to register this is you have to just put the equivalent market value in, but no money actually changed hands. And I have to say, I have quite a lot of sympathy for that. I think that is quite a reasonable response to it, this particular incident. I think some of the other stuff he's made a bit of a gaffe on, but that particular one seemed quite reasonable to me anyway.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. Look, I think he's finally come out with the right explanation on the football stuff.
Well, as I said to you last week, I have no quibble with him having to sit in the director's box or something to go to the football. I
No, and he's
think.
still paying for his season ticket, but he's also now the guest of the club in the director's box for security reasons. Why they couldn't have said that a bloody week ago, I do not know.
Yeah, because it was like he had private hospital. Anyway, I don't particularly have an issue with that. I think the clothes is a bit weird. I think all of that. Anyway, go back to last week's show if you want to hear that. We got, as I say, you gave your hot take on his speech. Is there anything else you want to add? Now you've had sort of a couple of days to reflect on it. You generally, I think, thought it was a decent speech.
I thought it was a good speech. Yeah, I was particularly moved by the art stuff. I think that speaks to the kind of Red and Roses Labourism that I've always believed in, and I think that's important. I don't think that you needed to. There wasn't a whole lot of additional policy in there. There
No.
was a quibble in the room that I was in, and I found this actually interesting in and of itself as to whether there was any new policy in there. And they kept naming policies that were new to them. But those of us who were completely immersed in it were saying, no, that's not new. And I find that that in itself is quite an interesting phenomenon because I think there is a problem in the modern era of politics whereby governments think they've announced something and it just doesn't cut through, even to their own activists going to party conference. Like, for example, people like the Hillsborough Laws know, and it's not new. It's been talked about for ages, and was, was a huge part. And some of the stuff they say was new. It was in the King's Speech. So that as a separate conversation about what is new policy, and when does it become new policy, and when is it on its journey to becoming policy? And that, of course, in think tank world, is even more confusing. But I think there are I think overall the tone was better than we've heard over the summer. There was more optimism, there was more of a sense of a journey, more of a sense of, as I say, I mean it is bread and roses. That's literally one of the sort of concepts that the Fabians were sort of, originally set up to be part
Yeah,
of.
I have to say, I don't think the more positive vibe has particularly filtered through. And that's fair enough. I'm sure, I don't know if you will, but I'm sure some in Labour would like to blame the media for that. But in part, that's because the narrative has already been, the miserable narrative has already been set. And
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably going to be true up to the budget. But
yes.
I mean, what?
And probably after.
And almost, I mean, there will be things in the budget that will be positive. There will be things in the budget that will be difficult. How you manage the narrative of that in a hostile media environment. And there's no point pretending that we don't have a pretty hostile media environment. One of the things that's most annoying about these dickheads who keep, sorry, we said we weren't going to do any edits and I've just said dickhead.
That's fine.
Is that, we are.
You don't get away with calling people. You're gonna have to have dickheads on the record now, and people in the Labour Party could can approach you and deal with that as they like.
I think on the sorry on yeah well, they keep briefing the Times, but the Times is not a friendly paper to us, and it's never going to be. And however much you feel like you ought to court it because you read a book about how Tony Blair did it in 1997, it's just we're 1,000 million years on, and just stop trying to make the Times love you. The Times is never going to love you.
I have to say, I think this blaming the media can only go so far. I understand the point you're making, but I think given the like pile on the Conservatives got towards the end of their time in government, again, some of it perfectly deserved. I'm not
Yeah, I mean,
sure saying
it
it's all the
depends on how
media's.
much. I don't think it's all the media's fault at all. I'm
Okay.
saying that they are behaving as if they have a certain type of media and they don't. And therefore, they should stop behaving as if. We do have a media that leans much, much further to the right. If you look at the papers
A print
on
media.
a print, yes, but the print media leads the broadcast media. We all know that. We
Sure.
know that when the Today programme, which is the sort of flagship morning news for all politicos, get together, what they do is look at what the headlines are in the press. And if you've got 6 out of 8 of your major titles being Tory supporting, then of course you're going to have a lean.
Okay, I actually really want to have this conversation. Well, I think we should do a whole show, probably a paid one for lovely pages on this, because it's such a, I mean, obviously I'm a media, so I love discussing this stuff, but I want to just wrap up your actually impressions from Liverpool. Do you think it's interesting to me that the party, from what you're telling me, the party sort of need to be G'd up. Given the success it had, I thought they would be dancing on the tables.
Well, as I say, the Labour Party loves to fight itself, so they'll always find something to be miserable about. But
Right.
actually, the wider ecosystem was really quite positive. All
Okay.
of the kind of, as I say, I spent most of my time talking to the environmental lobby, at least for the first half, and they are really positive about the moves that have been made. Very, very excited and optimistic. And not just on GB energy and planning, but on a really wide range of topics.
Fair enough.
So I think there's a real sense of movement and energy there. We had at the Fabians, we had a very well received fringe on justice with Timpson. I keep calling him by his dad's name, so I can never remember which one is the actual
It's James,
minister.
isn't it?
James Timpson, thank you. I keep saying Edward.
Did you
They're
get your
both.
watch fixed or your shoes polished at the same time? Sorry, I'm sorry. I couldn't help it.
That's fine because I was about to go down while they're both Thomas the Tank Engine trains, so we're being as flip as each other.
I actually rather like James Timpson. I think he does quite.
So do I. And his fringe was astonishingly well received. And I think there's some really interesting thinking there. And I think it's he his appointment of all the kind of goat appointments, as it were, is the one that I'm most excited by.
Yeah.
I think people have come away feeling a lot more reassured that there is a plan, and that it's going to take a while, and there'll be teething problems, but we're going to get through it, through the teething problems and into the sunlit uplands.
Okay, I don't think that message is filtering through, but let's see. Well, I think suspect this will be a topic we
You
return
mean the
to.
Telegraph didn't report that we had a fun and
No,
uplifting conference? You shock me.
I'm not so worried about that. I'm interested to see what filters through. Can I just come up with a couple of cringe moments? And they, you won't. I suspect you haven't had a chance to take in any of this, but this is given I was following it from the outside. This was our anyway. So there's been a couple of cringy moments. I've seen footage. First of all, I didn't see any footage of you dancing at any of these parties. So I don't know
Oh, I
what
was
you.
dancing my ass off at the Fabian reception. We had a DJ off
Oh, God.
between Steve Rotherham, Metro Mayor of
Oh.
the Liverpool City region, and Andy Burnham, Metro Mayor of the Manchester City region,
Oh,
playing
no.
one tune each, Manchester versus Liverpool.
I think I'd go Manchester. Oh.
It's more nuanced than you think. I mean, music-wise, I was definitely more of a Manchester
What
gal.
were we talking at Oasis?
We had Oasis,
Those.
Stone Roses, Happy
Yeah.
Mondays. He
Yeah.
ended with Love Will Tear Us Apart, which is a good move.
Tune.
He played Buzzcocks, Ever Fallen in Love, which is literally my theme tune.
Big tune.
So, like, music-wise, Andy was definitely King of the North there. But Steve Rotherham did play his ace and go out on Hey Jude, which was
Sure,
always going to
sure,
be kind
sure,
of a
sure,
big
sure.
moment. And we were in Liverpool, so it would have been rude not to give it to him.
Oh, did he win? Anyway, there were a couple of. There's a dance off I saw between Anna Sawar and Emily Thornberry. And having attended Lib Dem Glee Club in the past, I can tell you such things should all be banned in the age of smartphones. I also saw. I am going to have to send this to you. There is a TikTok video of various ministers, including, led by Ed Miliband. Doing various TikTok trends, which was I actually couldn't make it to the end. It was so cringe-inducing. But anyway, so you're back. I'm pleased to see you in one piece post-conference madness. And I guess we'll have to see as sort of we've got the Conservative Party conference coming up, which I'm sure will be a lovely, wholesome, united event with no backstabbing. Misbriefing or bitchiness at all.
I mean, it's going to go one way or the other. They're either just—I
No, it's
mean,
only going to go one way.
there probably will be a lot of nastiness because they're still having their mad old pointless contest. Who's going to be the quiz answer in 5 years' time as to who was the interim leader of the Conservative Party? But
That's a bit decisive, but okay.
I mean,
We'll
it's
come to it
true,
when we
isn't it?
do. We'll deal with it when the Tory party conference takes place.
But on the other hand, there's about three of them left. So So I don't know how busy their conference is going to be. I mean, ours was the biggest conference we've ever had.
Sure, I'm not surprised. Anyway, we will deal with the Conservative Party conference next week. Where can people keep up with you in the meantime?
I will be once again, now that I am not working from 7 a.m. till 2 a.m., writing my newsletter, which I will be reflecting on Labour conference and reflecting and thinking about Tory conference this weekend for my paid subscribers.
Lovely. We're at House of Comments Pod on the HOC podcast, sorry, on the Twitters. If you like this show and want more, and really, who wouldn't want more of Emma and I, please head to patreon.com/House of Comments podcast. Can I just say, I'm trying to do this smoothly, but Emma's cat keeps walking in front of the camera and it's making me deeply unprofessional. Anyway. Patreon.com/House of Comments podcast for all the good extra stuff we do, including Emma's on-the-spot reaction to Keir Starmer's speech. And it means not only do you get the extra audio from this show, you get the paid versions of both mine and Emma's newsletters included in that subscription. It's £5 a month. It's frankly a bargain.
Which, frankly, you would almost pay that just to get one of our newsletters. So it really is a bargain.
Bargain. We're just super generous. Go to theaddition.net for all the stuff I write on media and culture. And you can sign up for my newsletter there. And I'm at Charlotte A. Henry across social media. Emma's going to have a nap, and we'll see you next week.